The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
در مورد غیابت اعضای محترم با جدی بحث نترسین شارتی برق است وکیل صاحبای محترم.
That was the chaotic scene yesterday at the Afghan Parliament building in Kabul. The leader of the lower house of Afghanistan's National Assembly speaking there. At the moment, these Taliban-backed suicide bombers attacked Parliament, and there was a shootout that ensued after the attack. The Washington Post headline reads, Taliban bombs rock Afghan Parliament in brazen assault right at the Capitol. And this comes just 2 weeks after the Wall Street Journal reported that Iran was providing much stronger support for the Taliban as it anticipates America's withdrawal. They see America leaving, and so they step up their support for the Taliban. The Post article says a suicide car bomber followed by insurgents armed with rocket-propelled grenades launched an audacious attack on the Afghan parliament Monday, as it was meeting to endorse a new defense minister, forcing frightened lawmakers to flee the building. The Taliban quickly claimed responsibility. It says the brazen strike coincided with Taliban insurgents also capturing two districts in the north of the embattled country, witnesses said. A rare development, notice this, a rare development since militants have their strongholds in the south and east of the country. But you see, now they're pushing right into the capital. So first the United States leaves Iraq, and then what fills the power void? Well, you've got Iran on one side and ISIS on the other. And look at Afghanistan now. The U.S. strength. Everywhere you look, we see that strength spent in vain, just as we've been saying for so many years. The whole region, really, has just been turned on its head. This other piece, also in the Washington Post, this is from the editorial board, writing that Bahrain's rulers now flout the U.S. openly. This is from the editors at the Washington Post. And no, it's not exactly a really conservative publication, as you know. It says governments across the Middle East perceive that President Obama has subordinated much of U.S. policy in the region to the goal of completing a nuclear bargain with Iran. See, everything else is secondary to this goal of reaching a bargain with Iran. And the other nations in the region see this. The article says policies that might disturb Tehran, such as acting against the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad, have been put on hold. Meanwhile, traditional U.S. allies that are skeptical of the deal, such as Saudi Arabia, have been promised stepped-up U.S. military assistance. One U.S. client that has sized up the situation with particular cynicism is Bahrain, a Sunni monarchy in the Persian Gulf that hosts the U.S. Fifth Fleet. So their rulers now flout the U.S. openly, as it says here. And the Washington Post editorial board acknowledging that governments across the Middle East, they perceive that the president of the United States is not really interested in anything other than a deal with Iran. And of course, they can look at America and see all of the domestic issues that America is caught up in. It's race relations taking a turn for the worse. There's been quite a lot of news also about the new trade promotion authority that Congress is trying to pass for President Obama that would basically give the Obama administration expedited power to secure trade deals And much of this bill, if you've read anything about it, has been cloaked in secrecy, which is in itself is disturbing. There really haven't been too many congressmen that have sounded the alarm on what's happening here. One, Senator Jeff Sessions, he's adamantly opposed to giving the president any more authority than he already has. Sessions said yesterday, a vote for fast track is a vote to erase valuable procedural and substantive powers of Congress concerning a matter of utmost importance involving the very sovereignty of this nation. He also gave a lengthy speech yesterday in Congress. I just want to play a short clip from what he said yesterday.
Some of my colleagues have been saying that the trade promotion authority that the president is so desperately seeking, he's been hammering and bludgeoning his members in the Senate and the House to get them to not vote their conscience, but vote with what he wants. They say we should pass it because it restricts the power of the president. Well, give me a break. If this were true, why would the president want it? If he could do all this he wants to do without Congress, why isn't he doing it anyway? The entire purpose of fast track is for Congress to surrender its power to the executive branch for 6 years.
You can see why the president is lobbying so hard for this deal. It gives him more power. It puts him on the fast track and solidifying more deals with nations abroad. And, of course, there's quite a few conservatives like Mr. Sessions there who are quite angry with the Republicans, because many of them are working to help the administration get this through. There's an important vote today, and, of course, we'll be following that as it plays out here in the days ahead. I want to switch over to this story about the boat people that are coming across the Mediterranean and into Europe. I think we had some information on this just yesterday on the headlines that we run at the top of the hour, just the problem that Europe is facing with illegal immigration, much like the United States faces to its south. Yesterday, wrote The Spectator, "Welcome to Italy. This is what a real immigration crisis looks like." I guess actually this is from June 20th, this piece. But it begins the piece saying, "Let us suppose that along the coast of Normandy, up to 1 million non-EU migrants are waiting to be packed like sardines in small, unseaworthy vessels and to cross the English Channel. Let us suppose," it says, "that first the Royal Navy, then the navies of a dozen other EU countries start to search for all such vessels in the Channel right up to the French coast, out of the North Sea, and the Atlantic even, and then ferry all the passengers on board to Dover, Folkestone, Hastings, Eastbourne, and Brighton in a surreal, modern-day, never-ending version of the Dunkirk evacuation of 1940. Would the British government agree to take them all? What of the British people? And if they did agree, what would the British government and people do with all the migrants? How would they cope?" And then it brings it to its point. It says, well, Italy has been invaded in just this way, by migrants from many nations, all coming over here from Libya, and Italy's unelected government has agreed to take them all. This makes the Italian people, who are among the least racist in Europe, very angry, and it's hard to blame them. The Italians are upset. And, of course, the government there in Italy is welcoming these migrants and hoping that they'll spread out over Europe. And now, as you heard yesterday, Europe's beginning to take action. A little further down in this article, it says, it's worth remembering here that the majority of the boat people are Muslims, and reports suggest that a small number are Islamic terrorists. The terrorists of ISIS are, we know from their Twitter feeds, obsessed with taking their crusade to Rome. One of those arrested in the connection with the Islamic terrorist attack on the Bardo National Museum in Tunis in March had crossed the Mediterranean from Libya to Italy in a migrant boat in February. So this is not unlike, again, what's happening at the southern border of the U.S. This is becoming a huge security risk and quite a burden financially, as this article goes on to say, for the European Union. And so finally, you have the EU launching this operation to prevent this from happening, or to at least slow it down. The Wall Street Journal reported just the other day, the European Union launched a naval operation on Monday to deter people, smugglers, working off the coast of Libya. Although the bloc will only implement the first phase of the mission, intelligence gathering, for now because of a range of political constraints. So right now there's not a lot that the EU can do, but when those constraints are lifted, you can look for them to take a tougher stand. Says the mission eventually is intended to allow EU naval and air assets to use force to disrupt criminal gangs sending thousands of people a week on perilous sea journeys from Libya to Italy and other destinations in southern Europe. So here again, this is something to watch closely and see what it might lead to. The EU's having to take a stand. It says there are also growing concerns about possible attacks on EU personnel and assets by Libyan terrorist groups, which may have links to smuggling gangs, and by Sunni extremist group, or the Sunni extremist group Islamic State, which has gained a growing foothold in Libya amid the growing chaos and civil war. So as we'll talk about here in just a second, as you see the EU push for its own army, push for more armaments, you see, we talked yesterday about what they're facing to the east from Russia. Here's what's happening south. And this is only going to motivate them further to develop their own force, even separate and apart from NATO. This story from the local, this is yesterday, top MP, German MP, we need a fully equipped army, he says. The subhead under the piece, Parliament's military commissioner, Hans-Peter Bartel, said on Monday that it's time for Germany to finally begin spending enough on its armed forces. This Bartels individual, the military commissioner, he's quoted in the piece as saying, a tank battalion with no tanks is not a tank battalion. It can neither deploy nor train. He said, we need to comprehensively build up our ability to take part in collective defense in Europe. For that, we need to be completely equipped. The article talks about how costly this is, but that it's time. It's time for this to happen. And of course, as you'll see here from this next piece I want to quote from, it may be that they receive a lot of help, even from the United States, which seems like it wouldn't be in any position to do that. But this is from the Spiegel, Spiegel.com. It says, Cold War resurgent, U.S. nukes could soon return to Europe. Of course, there's quite a few of them already there, just not as many as during the Cold War. But here, this article is talking about that arsenal being upgraded. Why? Well, because of the threats that Europe is facing from Russia in particular. Spiegel says, for some time now, the Americans have once again been thinking about upgrading Europe's nuclear arsenal. And in the past week, a rhetorical arms race has begun that is reminiscent of the coldest periods of the Cold War. It says a high-ranking official in the Russian Foreign Ministry spoke in March about possibly stationing nuclear weapons in Crimea. And the Americans, too, are considering expanding their nuclear arsenal in Europe. For some time now, Washington has been thinking about positioning nuclear-equipped cruise missiles in Europe as it did in 1979. Finally, it says the new U.S. plans are only the latest step in an overall period of rearmament, a dangerous development that had already started before the outbreak of the Ukraine crisis. This article here from Spiegel, it made me think of that article my father wrote, I guess a year and a half ago now, Europe's Nuclear Secret. It's from the January 2014 Trumpet. You should go back and read it. It's a powerful article. And he brings out in there how that when you think of European nations and nuclear weapons, most people just think of Britain and France. But as he points out in the article, there's five other nations on the continent that have nuclear weapons stationed there, including Germany. All total, there's about 150 to 200 nuclear bombs on the continent. And now the United States is talking about giving Europe an upgrade, giving Germany an upgrade. And of course, one of the main points in my father's article there is that America better think twice about rearming Germany. I mean, is that really a risk worth taking? Go back, as I say, and read that article. You can read it again online at thetrumpet.com. It's titled Europe's Nuclear Secret, and it's from the January 2014 Trumpet magazine. This piece here from the Times of Israel is titled Michael Oren Sees a U.S. Alliance in Tatters and Israel on Our Own. We've talked about this, his new book, which comes out, I guess, any day. It says the U.S.-born former diplomat, who is now a Knesset member for the Kulanu Party, notes in his foreword that the Hebrew term for ally, that's the name of his book, Ben Britt, literally means the son of the covenant, and what he documents is actually the breaching of a covenant, the collapse of an alliance, an accumulated arc of abandonment by the Obama administration, and most especially the president himself of Israel, it says. And so here is the Times of Israel interviewing Mr. Oren for about an hour in his office on Monday at the Knesset. And this journalist here says so much. He talks about what he asked Oren during the interview. Are people going to look back in a few years and say this is what they were talking about in Israel as Iran closed in on the bomb and they were wiped out? And then Oren offered this reply. He says, well, it's happened before in history, hasn't it? I mean, it is something that we need to think about. It has happened before in history. The mass slaughter of Jews. Oren writes in his book, most disturbing for me, this is a quote from the book, most disturbing for me personally was the realization that our closest ally had entreated with our deadliest enemy on an existential issue without so much as informing us. He's talking about this deal, this ongoing deal with Iran, and how that for 7 months it went on behind Israel's back. Oren says this is ideological for President Obama, clearly ideological for him. It is hardwired, he says. Listen, one of the first things he does when he gets into the Oval Office, even before that, he's talking about Iran. See, it's all about Iran. And just like that Washington Post piece brought out, the other nations in the Middle East see this as well. They see that everything else is taking a back seat because of this rapprochement with Iran. Israel sees it. Bahrain sees it. Saudi Arabia sees it. They all see it. It's worth keeping an eye on for sure. All of these things factor in to numerous Bible prophecies. Appeasing Iran, the king of the south, or the head of the king of the south. The breakdown in that alliance between the United States and Israel. There are scriptures that talk about this as well. I want to just finish on one final topic here. This is from the Times here in the UK. It says, divorce centers make splitting up as simple as getting a TV license. Over here you have to get a license to watch the television. And it's just a matter of going into a shop and signing up for it, paying a fee, and then you're off. And now that's how easy it is to get a divorce. The article says divorce centers will open next month throughout England and Wales, where couples will be able to end their marriages over the counter. The change means that most of the 120,000 divorces processed a year will be taken out of the courts and away from the public eye, a move some say will make the process akin to obtaining a TV license. It's all made a lot easier now. And, well, I guess it makes sense from a paperwork standpoint. No sense in clogging up the courts. Let's make it easier. The article says at present it costs £410 for an uncontested divorce and takes on average 33 weeks, the new system, which can also be done by post, may be cheaper and quicker. The aim is to process work on the day of receipt or within 48 hours at the latest. Same day divorces. And so the institution of marriage takes another hit. Yet another one. It seems almost as if the things that should be easy, an easy procedure for an individual, for a couple, for a family, that if it should be easy, you can pretty much expect leaders in our nations to make it just a little bit harder, and then vice versa. Something that should be harder, it should be difficult to get a divorce, just to serve as a deterrent, if nothing else. Then the governments are there to try to make it as easy as possible. And of course, through it all, the family just breaks down. It's a dangerous threat to civilization. As Herbert Armstrong once said, it's a greater threat than even these nuclear bombs that we talked about here in this segment. The breakdown, the total breakdown of the institutions of marriage and family. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
The Trumpet Daily.
At a fundraising activity last summer, I guess this was late August 2014, President Obama said that Americans today are safer than at any time in the past three decades. And then he made this statement, "I promise you, things are much less dangerous now than they were 20 years ago, 25 years ago, or 30 years ago." He later said that the truth is that the world's always been a messy place, and you notice it more because of social media and the like, but that when you look at the facts or the bottom line, that this is a safer place today than it was even 20 or 30 years ago. I want to take you through a few scriptures here today. You can start by turning over to 1 Peter 5. Then we'll begin in verse 6. There are always leaders in a dangerous and mad world that are there to tell us that everything's going to be okay. It looks good. There's peace and safety. And then, like the Bible says, sudden destruction comes. But what I want to talk about in this segment is about what you should be doing. Given all that's happening, the proliferation of nuclear weapons, all that we discussed in that first segment, the problems our society is facing, how should you respond individually? 1 Peter 5 and verse 6 says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober," it says in verse 8. "Be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about, seeking whom he may devour." Our adversary, you see, is seeking anyone that he might devour. And so God says here, the key, the response should be to be vigilant. That's the key. We've got to stay on guard. We've got to be prepared for what's ahead. And that takes constant, continual, vigilant effort. Never letting down. Never giving in. Steadfast vigilance on our part. And of course, with the added strength and power and protection that God will provide. Notice verse 9, it says, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. So here's what it means to live by faith. We've got to stand against or resist against the devil and his evil influence, or else we're going to end up being a casualty, yet another casualty, in this great spiritual war. Satan goes about like a roaring lion, and he's looking for the prey that will just let up ever so slightly, that will slow down just a little bit. And then as that lion stealthily stalks his prey, he strikes at a time when that prey least expects it. That word vigilant there in verse 8 means to take heed lest through remission and indolence some destructive calamity suddenly overtake you. That's the lesson for us. We can't afford to let down. We can't get complacent. We can't become inactive. This is Satan's world, remember. And you can see it by just looking at the world around you as we try to cover with you on this program from time to time, almost every day, just running through some of the headlines. You hear them gone. I mean, we go through them on the Trumpet Hour as well. You see it on the website. This is Satan's world. And if we get careless or lazy or overconfident or self-reliant, we will be devoured, pure and simple. Look at Amos chapter 6, back in the Old Testament. Amos 6, get your Bible, read along with me. See what God says. There's a lot in the Bible just about this natural tendency for man to let up, to let down, to slow down. Verse 1 of chapter 6 in Amos, it says, woe to those who are at ease in Zion and to those who feel secure on the mountain of Samaria, the notable men of the first of the nations, to whom the house of Israel come. See, the problem here, Amos addressed it anciently. Of course, there's duality here as well. But the problem here stems from political, religious leaders, all of them. They're simply not being vigilant. They're at ease. This happened to a great many of God's people as well. During the late 1980s, early 1990s, they went to sleep spiritually, right at a time when they should have been watching like never before, watching unto prayer, as Peter said. The Telegraph columnist, we quote from him quite often, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, he wrote last year in July, in the 30 years or so that I have been writing about world affairs and the international economy, I have never seen a more dangerous confluence of circumstances or more remarkable complacency. That's his warning. Look, the trumpet's not just solely alone on this. Now, we certainly are alone in giving you God's perspective on world events. But there are a few commentators out there who see this dangerous confluence of circumstances and who are noting the remarkable complacency in our people. How that we've become just willing victims of self-deception. We're so preoccupied with pleasure and self-indulgence, getting married, and then if you don't like it, you can now go to a shop and get a divorce within a matter of hours. Verse 3 here, it says, you that put far away the evil day and cause the seed of violence to come near. See, okay, well, the world is kind of a dangerous place, and I do see the proliferation of nuclear weapons. I see the Middle East on fire. But still, it's not going to touch me, not my neighborhood, not my area, not my society. And so we go to sleep. We put far and away that evil day. Verse 4, woe to those who lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who sing idle songs. Well, you can read the rest there. You can see what Amos is addressing. We saw this happen again in the Laodicean era of God's church, talked about in Revelation chapter 3. An entire church era that became blind spiritually, that was naked spiritually. And we're seeing this history repeat itself in the national sense. Look at Ezekiel, another prophet of God. Ezekiel chapter 11. I'll read in verse 1. It says, "Moreover, the Spirit lifted me up and brought me unto the east gate of the Lord's house, which looks eastward. And behold," well, it talks about the 25 leading men with their backs turned to God. But notice verse 2, it says, "Then said he unto me, Son of man, these are the men that devise mischief and give wicked counsel in the city, which say, it is not near. Let us build houses. This city is the cauldron, and we be the flesh. Let's build our houses up. It's not near to the end. It's not dangerous." Well, now, I mean, it was dangerous. It was certainly more dangerous 20, 30, 40 years ago. The world's always been a messy place. It's easy to conclude that and to think that it's not getting worse and to think that it's not more dangerous than it once was. It is. Look at the weapons at man's disposal. Unlike anything else our human civilization has seen. Modern, sophisticated, advanced, and so powerfully deadly and dangerous. Chapter 12. Ezekiel 12, verse 21, "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, what is that proverb that you have in the land of Israel, saying, the days are prolonged and every vision fails?" What is that proverb, that prophecy? "Tell them, therefore," verse 23, "thus says the Lord God, I will make this proverb," or this prophecy, "to cease, and they shall no more use it as a proverb in Israel, but say unto them, the days are at hand, and the effect of every vision. Tell them," God says, "the days are at hand. Stop putting far away that evil day. They are here. They are upon us. And now is the time to wake up, spiritually speaking." Back to the New Testament. This is the Apostle Paul, Romans 13. Notice what Paul said here in Romans 13 and verse 11. It says, "And that knowing the time, that now is high time, he says, to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than we believed." I mean, in so many cases, these individuals, these writers of the New Testament, they believed that the return of Christ was going to happen in their day. And God allowed them to think that because he wanted them to have a sense of urgency. He didn't want them to let down and get complacent and go to sleep. He wanted them to look forward to, anxiously, eagerly, the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's the way we ought to be. And here we are. I mean, we're living through the events that are prophesied to happen right before the return of Jesus Christ. I mean, it is near. It's upon us. Verse 12 says, "The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light." See, we're right in the last hour before Jesus Christ's return. Put on this armor. Make sure that you're spiritually equipped every day. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, nor in strife and envying. But put you on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Don't make it easy to just fall back on old habits. Build new habits. Build your life around God. Mr. Armstrong, this is what he wrote back in 1955, where he said, "Yes, dear co-workers," he's writing to those who supported the Worldwide Church of God, that supported his work, "this thudding realization that many of our co-workers, so many that the very life of God's work has been threatened, have been unthinkingly allowing themselves to become so absorbed in foolish, time-wasting, worldly entertainment that it is crowding out their zeal for Christ, threatening loss of salvation." He said, "It leaves me just sick at heart He was trying to wake them up, to remind them that with all of these advancements in technology, which does make it easier to distribute God's truth, there's a lot of distractions that come with it, and we have to be oh so careful to not let these new technologies steal away our time, time that we should be praying and studying earnestly before God. It takes time to put on the whole armor of God. As it's discussed over there in Ephesians 6, I'll leave that to you to study. Read that whole chapter. Put on the whole armor of God. Let's just conclude back over here in James 4 to finish with that analogy about our adversary, the devil who goes about as a roaring lion. James 4 and verse 7, it says, "Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." See, resist against the devil and his lion-like attacks. Flee from his influence and draw near to God. If ever there was a time to draw near to God, I mean, this is it. The fact that we're getting so close to the return of Christ. It should, as my father wrote in the Epistles of Peter booklet, it really should change our behavior. The knowledge that Christ's return is imminent, that it's even at the door, that should bring urgency to our lives. This is a quote from the booklet, the Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope, where my father says, "This worst crisis ever is about to give birth to a new and splendid age. Today, the end of all things truly is at hand." So we must take Peter's point to heart, because time is so short. We must be sober and watch unto prayer. He's talking about what's written there in 1 Peter 4, verses 1 through 7. You can look at that later. Look at that later on your own time. But he says, just to repeat what I said a moment ago, the fact that Christ's return is so near should change our behavior. So keep your focus on the things that we need to be focused on in these very dangerous times. That's what keeps us so positive and hopeful, looking forward, looking ahead to Jesus Christ's return and the establishment of God's kingdom on this earth. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is at kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.